You know, in 2024, why do we really need to have a survey of 10 doctors and model it up? You have to implement AI into your, let's call it in this case, sales and marketing. Because if you don't, your competitor is already doing it and they've automatically got advantage on you.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is how to use AI to connect meaningfully with doctors and patients. In the past, the best way to understand people was market research. These days, it's real-world big data. Today, I'm with Ian Chapman-Banks, the founder of Scream AI, which uses AI to identify, target, engage, and convert your customers into a fully automated science. Thank you so much. I've been really looking forward to this particular episode because I know a bit about Scream. So it's such a pleasure to have you on. Can you start with telling us a little bit about your background and how you got into this and what led you to found Scream?
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is I'm a physicist and coder, scientist by training. And then I kind of found my way into Apple over in San Francisco in the early days, around about 99, just after Steve Jobs came back. And I was various roles around kind of development and sales tools. And then after 3-4 years in Cupertino, I then moved up to Microsoft in Seattle, where I was partly responsible for the Xbox program. And they eventually moved me to Asia to launch the Xbox program in Asia, which has nothing to do with pharma at the moment. We will get into that in a moment. And then shortly after that, I moved to Motorola, where I became eventually, after a number of years, the kind of the CEO or the general manager of the region, responsible for multi-billion dollar P&L out of Beijing. So if you remember the Razer phone, everybody who's kind of old enough were kind of defined by the Razer phone. I was kind of part of the launch program for Razer and all those Motorola iconic fashion phones.
Yeah.
And then in 2008, we decided to kind of split the region and I moved from Beijing to Singapore, where I really kind of started to think about, you know, as Lord Leverhulme said, back in the 1800s, the founder of Unilever, as it is today, 50% of our marketing budget is wasted, but we've no idea which 50% of that is actually wasted or active. So really, when I was working with Motorola, we were running, you know, $1 billion below-the-line kind of marketing incentives and retail and channel incentives, and then above the line, we were spending $250 million a year. And we really had no idea how it was working. So when I got to Singapore, I met my co-founder, Rene, and we kind of figured out that most data is very complex. It's very hard to understand and see patterns in data. And kind of correlation doesn't work because it's kind of linear. You kind of need to be able to look at a linear pattern. And we realized that human behavior is actually not linear. It's very non-linear, you know, cause and effect. You do something today and 6 months later, it may change your life. So what we decided to do was actually develop a series of algorithms that found patterns, nonlinear patterns in data, which were causal, therefore behavioral, therefore were intent-based. Mm-hmm. And once they're intent-based, we could use it to predict what somebody's next action was going to be, whether they're a doctor, a pharmacist, a patient, a consumer, someone looking to buy a BMW, someone that's looking to look for the best education for the children. So any kind of behavior can be detected if you can actually find enough data. So this is kind of 10 years ago, and the internet wasn't like the internet it is today, and kind of finding data was kind of sparse, unlike today.
Yeah.
So fast forward, we spent 5 years refining the algorithms, so the back end, and then we spent another 5 years building the front end, which is kind of the user interface, and it's kind of self-serve now for a lot of clients. But really, if I'd known if it was going to take 10 years, I wouldn't have done this because it's like getting a pet for Christmas. You can't really give it back. So
a labor of love,
son. So once we started on the journey, we had no choice but to see it through. But if we kind of fast forward to today, where we have an infrastructure where we scream as an integral part of the internet, integral part of all the digital advertising auctions, and an integral part of, if you like, the ecosystem into Google and all the other large players in this arena, we now have an ability to see all digital activity at a country level, which is massive amounts of data, which should be trillions of pieces of data, websites people go to, apps people open. We're not interested in the individual. We're interested in cohorts. So we don't have any indicators around personal identifiable information. We don't use cookies. We're using models. We are building AI models to probabilistically identify, in the case of our healthcare business, who are HCPs? What kind of HCPs are they? Are they an oncologist? Are they in Germany? What kind of oncology are they focused on? And what kind of treatments are they focused on? Therefore, what kind of claims would a pharmaceutical company have to make to be able to convert that oncologist in Germany to be thinking about their product? So it took us a long time to make sure that we were compliant in the GDPR world into the ICO world. And all of our pharmaceutical clients, we have over 30 around the world. We've all been onboarded, both from a legal perspective and a compliance perspective. So essentially what we're doing is we're using an AI algorithms to probabilistically detect cohorts of HCPs and then understand what they're interested in and give them the content from the pharmaceutical companies, which allows them to make the best decision for their patients.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And that's kind of part one. Then part two is we've built a digital media buying tech stack on the back of it, which is cookie free, again, mm-hmm. probabilistic, where we can then place ads in front of those HCPs, whether it's on medical publishers, behind kind of gated firewalls, or even in the open internet. So that's in essence what we've been trying to achieve, certainly over the past 5 years with our pharmaceutical clients.
Yeah. Amazing. And such a strong tech background from, you know, some of the top players. So you come from a good pedigree there. Can you tell me more about the data? Because from what I understand, you really have probably one of the biggest aggregated data sources that I've seen. So could you maybe tell us a bit more about what data is in there and what data you collect, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would suggest that we are, and certainly in the, it's called the healthcare world, the pharmaceutical world, mm-hmm. I think we are probably the largest aggregator of data. I haven't come across any other company that has gone out with such a focus to really have the full data set of probabilistic behaviors for HCPs. I think we're running it now in 80 countries.
Wow.
80 countries. And what we're able to do, because we are part of the internet, and because we manage and run advertising auctions, every time your device goes to a website, somebody bids on those ad slots on the website as your phone goes to that website.
Yeah.
So if we both went to the BMJ today, we would be served up different ads because our preferences are different. Now, how we run this is it's cookie-free. There's no identifiers. We're just using models to say this is potentially a HCP. This is potentially an oncologist, and they're interested in this kind of content.
Yeah.
So any advertising, any publisher, any website that has advertising, which is about 97% of all websites, even websites behind gated firewalls, the British Medical Journal, for example, all have advertising slots. So we can actually see the traffic to those websites, and we probabilistically determine based on that traffic what kind of cohort do they fall into. Are they a nurse? Are they a doctor? Are they a patient? And if they're a doctor? What kind of specialty? And what are they interested in? So we have ability to take a census of the whole population.
Wow.
So we're doing this conversation today in the UK. We can take a census of 64 million people in the UK. We can build a probabilistic model to say how many of these are potentially doctors, how many of these are nephrologists, how many of these are oncologists, pediatricians. And then we can do a further cohort analysis that says, for our clients, what are they interested in a as a pediatrician, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty detailed, but the AI runs it all. So we don't need hundreds of data scientists.
Yeah.
It's all cohort based. And we only have a team of, in Scream, we've got 80 people, 80. We've got 40 mm-hmm. AI engineers. We've got 12 people running our tech stack. And then we only have two data scientists to manage the AI. So we're kind of very lean in what we do. But I think if you get the AI to do the work, which it has to do because this data is so complex that a human being cannot possibly decode all of those patterns.
I find it fascinating that you can get such high coverage. So that's basically anyone who is online you can access, because that's really in contrast to what we see with claims data, for example. You know, I think we get roughly 80% coverage with claims data because it's missing healthy young people that aren't going to see their doctor. It's missing people who can't afford to go to the doctor or aren't on a particular doctor's list. So this is actually more comprehensive than the usual suspects of data that we use in the pharma industry.
Yeah, it's a different slice of looking at it.
Yeah.
And what we're very focused on is intent. Mm-hmm. Claims data is, first of all, deterministic. Absolutely. It's actually happened. It's happened, and this is what they claimed against. Whereas our data is, we use it as predictions. This is what will happen in the next 7 days, 10 days, 15 days, 30 days.
Yeah.
If you place an ad in front of this HCP with this message, this claim, you know, Panadol reduces fever in babies in 15 minutes, you place that in front of pharmacists in Collingwood in Australia, they are more likely then, when a patient comes into the pharmacy, recommend Panadol as a first-line treatment for reducing temperature in babies, because that's an area with a very high concentration of mums with young children, as an example of some of the work we've done in the past for GSK.
Yeah, interesting. And I saw that on the website that you can identify the most valuable customers and their behaviours, but not the individual. So you're still respecting privacy, but delivering relevancy. So how do you do that?
So we build a probabilistic model. Let's talk about pharmacists in Australia, because it's a totally different base of interest. So, and we can do it geographically. So we know in an area called Collingwood in Australia, for example, our data tells us that there's a large proportion of mums with young children.
Okay.
And the concerns that mums have in young children is, what happens when a baby has a high temperature? How do I deal with it? Now, we know that is an issue. And then working with GSK, as it was before they split, as Haleon now, we were able to say to GSK, do you have a claim that says Panadol reduces temperature in babies in 15 minutes? If you do, then we should be placing that in front of pharmacists in this area, because the mums aren't going to go to the doctor. They're going to walk into the pharmacist and say, my baby's got a temperature, what should I do? So what we're able to do is then build a Venn diagram that identifies the behaviors that a pharmacist would undertake. So what are the 100 things that a pharmacist does in a month? Mm-hmm. And then if those behaviors in that cohort are kind of 98 out of 100, it means we have, 98 of those things have been done by this cohort of pharmacists, checking, sometimes they have to update their medical credentials with the Australian government. Sometimes they have to, they're sending, they're going online to their pharmaceutical supplier, looking what the prices are, constantly interacting with the surgery next door. And we can actually detect 100 pharmacy or pharmacist behaviors. Once we get to 98 out of the 100, we know that it's 98% chance that this cohort is a pharmacist in Collingwood, because we can look by city or by region. And then we then probabilistically determine the next website or websites that these pharmacists will go to in the next 7 to 10 days. And then on those websites, we don't know they're going to go there. We've got no cookies. We've got no identifiers. Mm-hmm. But based on the previous behavior in the mm-hmm. past 30 days, we estimate anything up to 60,000 URLs these pharmacists will go to. And in the bid stream, we will bid to win those ad slots on behalf of GSK and the Panadol ad.
Yeah. Very cool. What about with doctors? So for prescription products, how do you handle that one?
Yes. So doctors is another interesting one. So let's pick oncologists.
Okay.
Let's pick metastatic breast cancer stage 4. Mm-hmm. So because obviously doctors get involved at different stages of metastatic breast cancer.
Yeah.
Now, we will build upfront for the client, whoever they are. I mean, obviously, Pfizer is very active in this area with Ibrance, for example, and they're a mm-hmm. client of ours. And we will then build in a country. Let's say we're doing work in places like Argentina and Germany and France and Switzerland, probably 20 different countries. Mm-hmm. We will build at a country level what is 100 things or 150 things a oncologist will do digitally. And then again, we build now an oncologist cluster. And it'll be unique for Argentina, will be unique for Germany, will be unique for the UK, will be unique for Brazil, Mexico, all countries we're working in. And now we have got a cluster of oncologists, which are 98% accurate. Mm-hmm. And we will then cohort that on those oncologists who's interested in metastatic breast cancer, stage 4. And then we will take, in this case, the claims that our client has, what are the 4 or 5 claims? Mm-hmm. And then we will look at all the different cohorts we've built, and the AI will find which claims will match best with which personas of those oncologists mm-hmm. that are interested in metastatic breast cancer in stage 4 and all the other medications that they are engaged in.
So can you really personalize that message to that oncologist or to that segment of oncologists?
Yeah, nice. Based on the persona, are they an early adopter? Mm-hmm. Are they a late adopter? Are they an innovator? Are they kind of concerned about patient welfare? Does his or her particular patients, or her patients have sleeping disorders? So they are looking around for medications which will obviously have low side effects, are efficacious, and give the patient comfort. And we are able then to place different types of ads for the different claims for the same product to different personas of oncologists that are interested in different things.
Yeah.
And we call it multivariable analysis. You could also call it, dynamic content optimization, mm-hmm. where we're able to optimize the content that particular oncologist sees in real time. And by the way, the engine does it all. There's no human beings behind the scenes because it's just a little bit too complex to do this in real time and be very focused. And also the cost of doing it would be quite extraordinary.
Yeah. And so I'm just thinking, you've got quite a lot of pharmaceutical clients. What are the kind of challenges or problems they've had when they've come to you? And maybe if we could just outline, you don't have to give which company did which, but, specific challenges, how you solve them. It would be nice to get like a flavor of some of the different kinds that you get brought.
Yeah, so if we're talking about prescription, companies, pharmaceutical companies that are selling prescription products to doctors, there's been a myriad of challenges. So one challenge is that since COVID, it's been very hard for reps to see doctors. Mm-hmm. So the coverage of reps is much less than it was. It's very difficult for a rep to see more than 3 doctors a day. So getting in front of doctors is very challenging. Number 2, with the advent of GDPR and the fact that cookies are going away, and Google announced the deprecation of cookies on January the 1st. Mm-hmm. So sometimes this year, you will have no identifier to place an ad against.
Yeah.
So companies are coming to us saying, well, kind of the reps find it difficult to get in. By the way, the rep forces are very expensive. How do we reduce the cost of rep forces? To talk to the doctors. And then on the targeting side, cookies are going away. How do we target doctors more effectively? Because we want to start focusing on what we call digital detailing.
Yeah.
You know, it can be to supplement the reps. It can be to augment the reps, or in some areas where the coverage is zero, that it could
them.
Be the, yeah, replace them. There was one very large British pharmaceutical company that launched an allergy product in the UK, selling to pharmacists, and they didn't have any rep coverage at all. They just wanted us to place ads in front of pharmacists in areas where the pollen was very high.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to do that. So that's one example. Now, the big challenge pharmaceutical companies have is one of the big questions they come to is, okay, can you help us increase our interaction with doctors? Can you help us connect with doctors? Can you help us build a value exchange so the doctors see us as valuable, so that they would give us their email address so we can correspond with them meaningfully to drop off samples, invite them to seminars, talk to our specialists? So really there's a whole range of issues that the pharmaceutical companies have from, in essence, every pharmaceutical company would love to have a meaningful digital interaction with a HCP or a doctor or a pharmacist that is two-way, that they are showing incredible value as opposed to just hitting them incessantly with meaningless emails.
Yeah.
So I would say that's the biggest challenge that the pharmaceutical companies are having right now, is building meaningful interactions. And then secondly is, how do I reach them? How do I place meaningful ads and content in front of them at the right time, at the right place? And of course, as cookies go away by the end of the year, targeting digitally is going to be really difficult. So that's what the coming to us, talking to us about. We have around about 30 of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world that we're working with today, in about 80 different countries. So we are language agnostic.
Mm-hmm. That's good to know. Yeah. So you can pick it up anywhere and see the intent and figure out what's going to happen.
Yeah. I think at any one point in time, we're running, you know, hundreds of campaigns across, let's say 30, 40 different countries in a quarter.
And I think the fact that you're able to do this privately is a huge thing, because there's so many regulations. You know, in Europe, we've got the AI Act, which is still being drafted, but we've got GDPR, you've got the Californian Protection Act, you've got Privacy Act, there's so many, and they're changing. It's such a moving feast. You know, I was on this panel about it, about, I think it was in October, and there was someone from the European Commission, and it's still another 2 years before they're going to have, you know, that drafted. So it's constantly changing. So this gives you a really good advantage there.
No, it does. And it is constantly changing. So we have to keep up. And of course, the interesting thing about the GDPR regulations enacted by the EU is that all of our 30 pharmaceutical clients have operations in the EU. So whether we're in Philippines or Indonesia or Japan or Australia or Brazil or Mexico, everything we do has to comply with GDPR on behalf of our clients. So all the regulations that the EU enact are actually global in nature. So we have to make sure that we are fully compliant, both kind of legally and privacy wise. And part of the challenge, the opportunity is that we have been aborted by all the pharma companies. It's taken us, and as these inactions take place and as they get further regulated, it's always a learning curve for us to do this, but so far it's all been good, and we've been able to show complete compliance because everything we do is probabilistic. There's no identifiers in our database. So now, that was not by design, that was by accident, because when we started off, processing cookies is very, very expensive, and we couldn't afford to do it, so we had to build probabilistic models to replicate that kind of targeting effect. Now, in the early days, advertising agencies and pharmaceutical companies were like, well, this can't be real because we love cookies. And then all of a sudden, as time progressed, especially over the past couple of years, pharma companies have gone, well, we can't use cookies anymore. So that's why our biggest base is in healthcare, because the pharmaceutical clients really realized very early on that they had to be compliant, and cookies does not allow them to be compliant.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, amazing. And so there's all of that data is already in the platform. All these algorithms are running. So how long does it take when someone starts with you to set it up and to actually start to get the insights and use it effectively?
Yeah, I would say it normally takes about a week.
Okay.
About 5 working days from essentially you give us a brief. That brief could be, you know, could be I want to detect rare disease, I want to detect hepatitis C, or I want to detect leukemia patients in America.
Yeah.
So that would enable us, let's say leukemia patients, rare disease. Now, that's pretty interesting because detecting rare disease at a country level is a very different use case, and it's something that pharmaceutical companies are coming to us to do more and more, leukemia, hepatitis C, Gaucher's disease.
Yeah.
And what we're able to do is the client would give us a brief, which would include the list of symptoms. It would include the names, the branded, the generics, themselves, the competitors. And then we would set the engine running for around about 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then the engine would then start to build all those constructs. And then in our platform, a rare disease folder would be created. And in rare disease, would be leukemia USA, or it could be Gaucher's disease Turkey. And then within that folder would be all of the behaviors of both patients and doctors towards leukemia and or Gaucher's disease or hepatitis C. We then will have an interim meeting with the client where we'll take them through the data. And then there'll be normally some tweaking. Yeah, I'd really like to learn more about this. Yeah, that's not so interesting. Let's now change these 5 things. And then we go back and rerun the engine. And then by the end of the week, the client has all of the insights and the information that they would need to really understand deep insights, what kind of people have leukemia, what type of doctors are interested in leukemia, what are the treatment preferences. And then we also overlay that with a product that we call White Spaces, because there's no such thing as open markets anymore. So what we'd be able to do is then say, if you have a particular cure for a particular, let's call it, stick with leukemia, then here are the claims that you can make, which are not contested because your competitors are making these 4 or 5 claims. So if you were to make those claims, that wouldn't resonate with the doctors. You need to make these claims. And if you do that, there is a segment of the market which is open to you. So using our White Spaces platform, we can actually size the market. Mm-hmm. We can actually help you understand the claims you need to make. And then we can place ads in front of those HCPs that are in what we call the uncontested white space that you could actually generate market share. So we can get quite granular.
So it's quite different from the traditional model of finding rare disease with the EHR data, where you're going through the symptoms in the records, either ICD-10 codes if they're diagnosed,
correct,
but for the undiagnosed, it's finding them from the symptoms. So this one is actually almost like getting the symptoms in front of the doctor, so it tweaks them as soon as they see a patient that has that. Is it that the case? And then I guess you know who the doctor is, do you?
Well, we will know the type of doctor, and we will know what websites they're going to, so we can place that in front of them. By the way, we actually do everything by those codes. So those codes are in our database. So we've actually listed every single disease.
Yeah.
So those codes are an integral part of our white spaces because it allows the doctors to triangulate this actual disease by code.
Yeah.
So we can build all the diseases by code. So pretty interesting part of our database.
Yeah, very interesting. And the costs seem, from what I understand, pretty reasonable compared with a lot of the other ways of approaching these challenges.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to the traditional providers, the traditional research companies, they can charge, you know, they could charge anything from $250,000 upwards.
Yeah.
And can take 3 months because essentially a lot of it is panel based.
Yeah.
Whether that's a digital panel or whether it's a survey of getting 10 doctors in a room and then modeling it up, which has been very valuable in the past, but this hasn't changed since 1950s.
Yeah.
Madman advertising. You know, we charge a fraction of that, and we're kind of all finished within 2 weeks. And then we can literally then be in markets. If your claims are ready, being in market, meaning we can be placing ads in front of those doctors that would love to see your claims. So really, for us, it normally takes a little bit longer than that because there's obviously certain levels that clients have to go through, back and forth. But essentially, I would say within 3 or 4 weeks, everything's signed off, all the insights, the claims, the uncontested spaces, the strategy is built, and we can be placing ads in front of doctors within a month and then showing results. And we've done a lot of work in the Middle East, for example, just to give an example of how we can measure it. In the Middle East, Saudi Arabia is a very big market. Yeah. We've been selling nicotine gum. Yeah. And actually, nicotine gum is available online from and doctors can write prescriptions online in KSA, Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And we have been running campaigns via our clients' digital websites and by doctors' e-commerce sites. So we've been able to see 40-50% uplift in sales for nicotine gums off these websites once these ads have been placed in front of patients in KSA, for example.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of clients, we've been able to show a increase in sales, prescription sales, as they match up the IQVIA data, kind of by brick level, kind of 3 months after the campaign, they can see,
I know, it's so out of date.
Yeah. They can then see the increase in sales. And we did some interesting studies where we would, because we would have, let's say we can pick a country, let's say UK. So we could say that we're going to have Birmingham as the blackout. We're going to run campaigns in Liverpool and Manchester and Newcastle. And in London, there's going to be campaigns, but in London, the reps will also sell as well as our campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we can then do is then see the relative uplifts of what happened in a city where there was no campaigns, what happened in a city where there was only digital campaigns, what happened in a city where there was a sales and supplemented by digital. And we've done this in several countries, and it's then been measured by, it's then been verified by companies like Ipsos and Kantar.
Yeah.
And it was pretty interesting is that obviously you get a greater uplift where there is sales and digital, but where there's only digital, the ROI is greater because the cost of the sales force is less.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. What I really like also is, you know, when you're relying on market research data, not only is it just a lot of faffing about, but it takes so long, you know, the recruitment phase takes so long. And then after that, if you've triggered adverse events in the research, it then, you know, because it's named doctors and named patients, then you are going through this whole adverse event reporting and reconciliation process. Whereas this one, because of the privacy, you avoid that whole area completely, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And because it's all digital, it's observational. So we miss out all of those kind of what happens with real people in a panel or a focus group.
Yeah.
And it's just faster. I mean, you know, the Kantars and the Ipsoses of the world are obviously rapidly moving towards digital and adopting these new tips and tricks. But essentially, you know, in 2024, why do we really need to have a survey of 10 doctors and model it up? It's just not necessary anymore. Or run a survey of 10 doctors and give them an Amazon voucher. Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of, it's trying to solve the same problem in the same way as you've done for 30 years as opposed to doing differently. Yeah.
It's what I keep, it's one of my things that I have a bugbear about is people are so often in pharma saying we've digitally transformed, but no, they're just digitizing. It's not transformation. So it's basically taking what they're doing and putting it digital, but that's not a transformation and that's not what they need now. Now they need to actually change the basic way that they're doing things. And this is giving a way to do that, which is really cool.
I think the general message is that you have to implement AI into your, let's call it in this case, sales and marketing. Because if you don't, your competitor is already doing it and they've automatically got advantage on you.
Yeah.
So the pharmaceutical companies that adopt AI into sales and marketing and go to market are going to do real digital transformation as opposed to just digitizing what you're doing. So in actual fact, it's not just a question of Screen being an AI company. I think every pharmaceutical company has to adopt this. And the 30 companies that we work with, there is a very broad recognition that AI is transformational.
Yeah.
And to be very candid, that they are incredibly open to this. And I think pharmaceutical companies before COVID, they didn't really have an online presence because they didn't need to. They had incredible rep forces, they had great coverage. But during COVID, it kind of changed everything and things haven't really gone back to normal.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. In the UK, almost impossible to see a doctor in real life, right?
It was already hard before COVID. I remember it. Every year it gets harder and harder. So COVID just sealed the coffin on that. Yeah,
it really did. And if patients can't see doctors, how do reps see doctors?
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So you really do have to adopt the digitization. And actually, every doctor in every country in the world is online. Mm. They are using their mobile phone and they are getting 90% of their information on pharmaceutical products and cures and adverse events and side effects digitally.
So
once we accept that every doctor is online and using his phone, his tablet, his PC to collect all the information he needs, it just needs a rationalization of, say, how do we digitally transform ourselves to make sure that we are communicating with these doctors in the right appropriate way, and you know, evaluating the right value exchange. What are we giving them in exchange for what they're giving us, which could be email addresses, for example, or attention in going to seminars or agreeing to have a sample drop or a rep coming to see them.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing. Well, very, very interesting. And I really like the unique approach that you've got and the huge amount of aggregated data compared to anything else I've seen. So I really encourage anyone listening to take a look at Skream. If you go to skremtech.com, you'll be able to get in touch with Ian and his team. Thank you so much for your time today.
Dr. Bates, absolutely wonderful. Thank you for the opportunity to tell my story.
Have a lovely day. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.